Everyone and welcome. This is Seek Sustainable Japan. I'm JJ Walsh in Hiroshima, joined by Rachel Nicholson, also in Hiroshima.
Hi, it's nice to see you, Joy.
It's great to see you. And today we are talking about Kagura.
Yes.
Now, what is Kagura? Can you tell us in a short summary there?
I'll try to be brief. For those who are not initiated into what Kagura is, as briefly and succinctly as possible, the Cliff Notes version of what Kagura is, it is a performing art. So when you think Japanese performing arts, you might think Kabuki or No or any of those very famous performing arts. It's a similar performing art, but it is a much older performing art. So it is basically, it started as a ritual to give thanks to the gods of harvest. There are mentions of it in two of the oldest Japanese sort of like sources that we have, the Nihon Shoki, Chronicles of Japan, which was written in 720, and the Kojiki, the Record of Ancient Matters, which was compiled from oral tradition in 712. And these are basically, they have mentions of Kagura and early Kagura. So it is a performing art. There is live music. There are amazing costumes, as you can see on the screen, ornate masks. Hiroshima Kagura has a very unique sort of way that it evolved, which we can talk a little bit more about later, but it's basically a play, very simple, easy to understand, usually good versus evil. And that's what Kagura is. It is performing arts with live music, live chanting. There's lines as well. So there's like a clear-cut story that you can follow along with. And it has a very long history in Japan and very distinct history here in Hiroshima.
Awesome. And we're going to be talking more about your favorite stories. There are many Kagura stories, yes, all kind of based on folktales, mythology. There's a lot of connections to like Shinto shrines. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the things they're holding, you might see at Shinto shrines when you're visiting. But basically, it's wonderful to have you on, Rachel, and talk about this because Kagura is something you should really go and see if you're in Hiroshima. It's very exciting, very vibrant, lots of fun. And we have Kagura night every Wednesday, and you are very active in that performance. You are translating, yes, doing the subtitles in, yes, English, but also doing interpreting at the events. Is that right?
Yes. So Wednesday night, Kagura has 11 or 12 years of history as it stands. We started doing the English subtitles 2-3 years ago now. And basically, so what it is that the season, the Kagura season, starts for the Wednesday night performances this year on April 1st. April 1st, performances start at 7 o'clock. And basically, what I do there is a small screen on top of the stage where they project the subtitles in English. So I am in charge of translating the subtitles. I also do interpretation for the host. So there's a host, a Japanese host, who will introduce the story and introduce some of the highlights to the audience before the show starts. So I interpret that into English for our guests. And then also, once or twice a month, they do a post-show Q&A session. It does cost a little bit extra, but it basically means you get to go backstage, talk to the Kagura troupe that day, ask them any questions. It's all interpreted. So it's a really lovely chance to sort of talk to the performers and get to know them and ask your questions. So I also do interpretation for that. I translate all of their materials, their website, their guidebook, all of it. I've been involved with them for, goodness, 8 or 9 years now, probably. So you get a really good experience for first-time viewers. You have nothing to fear. You don't have to speak classical Japanese. You can read about what Kagura is and what the play is going to be about, so there'll be no surprises. Very easy for beginners and for people who are not quite sure what to expect from a performing arts performance.
Yeah. I have heard even from Japanese people who love Kagura that quite often it's difficult to understand what they're saying because, like you said, it's very classic or old style Japanese. Right. That must have been challenging to translate a lot of these speeches and parts of the story, right?
So it's the closest comparison I can think in English is not Shakespeare, but Chaucer. So if you go back to Chaucer's English, It's kind of that style of where it's close to English, but it's different enough that it's like, wait, I'm not sure what this means at all. So when I first started doing my translation for them, and I first started, this is a very long time, it was probably, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago, when I was asked to translate a Kagura play for the first time, when we were still doing what was called an evening of Kagura, where it was Kagura performances for international tourists only. And they started this, it was a passion project of a very great supporter of local Kagura, whose name is Miss Furutani. And she and I have known each other through work, and she really wanted me to translate. And I had seen Kagura only once previously, so I didn't really know what I was getting into. So at the time, what they did is they had have the classical Japanese that they were going to say, and then they would have a modern Japanese translation of that. So basically, they would put it into modern Japanese for me, and then I started off translating from that. Which worked pretty well for a while. And then when I actually got the chance to really see Kagura more regularly and realize, oh, wait, this isn't what I thought this was going to mean, so I'd have to go back and tweak. And then you start to sort of understand what they're saying because you've read the script. So you have a really big advantage in that you have read the script, you know what they're going to say, and eventually you start to sort of make sense of it almost like a little puzzle. When you're like, oh, this phrase comes up a lot, and this is sort of what it sounds similar to in modern Japanese, and I think it has this connotation, but even then, there are still things where I'm really stumped as to what they mean. Sometimes they throw in poetry, or they'll throw in, you know, all this other stuff that's kind of difficult to parse, and for that, thankfully, the Kagura team, the people at the RCC Culture Center, various people who are connected to Kagura who are just so well-versed, I call them, they're like the professors of Kagura for me. So if I have a question and I don't know, I'm like, okay, I think this means this. Is this what it means or am I completely off? And then they always can get back to me with what the meaning would be. Sometimes there isn't a really good close equivalent. Sometimes you kind of have to be like, I think this is probably the nuance of what they're saying. But it is very, very fun, but it is very difficult at first because it is so completely different from modern Japanese.
How did you get interested in Kagura and then interested in becoming a part of the team doing translation, interpreting? How did that all begin? Did you just go to a performance and be like, I have to get involved? I love this.
It was actually really just happenstance, to be honest. I was coming back from work one night, walking through my neighborhood, and I heard the very distinctive sound of the Kagura drums, the taiko drums and the flute and the hand cymbals. And I was like, what is going on? And I went to this local shrine where they were having a Kagura performance for, I believe it was an autumn festival. And there was a stage and everybody was sort of sitting on the ground on, like, you know, tarps and all that. And on stage were these beautiful women in kimono holding these maple leaf branches and just the elegant dancing and the music. And I was just like entranced because it was so beautiful. And I had no idea what I was watching at the time. I was just like, what is going on? What? And you know, the women, they turned into demons and then they had like a fight scene and it was like exciting. And I just like couldn't like take my eyes off of it. And so I remember I took a video of it. I still have that video, by the way. And I would remember, like, I would be at work and I would just be like, I really want to like hear that, the music again. So I would like play the video and like watch it and be like, I don't know what this is. But it's cool. And then eventually I came to find out that it was called Kagura. And by another crazy happenstance that sort of happened to be the year that they were getting an evening of Kagura off the ground, and the woman involved with that, Mrs. Furutani, she came to me and was like, you know, I know that you do translation, would you be interested? And I was like, sure. And that's kind of how I fell into the whole thing. It wasn't me being proactive. It wasn't me saying, oh, I really want to be. I just happened to be extremely lucky in the fact that she asked me to do it. And I've been doing it ever since. The Kagura at the time was run by, I don't know who was running it at the time for an evening of Kagura, but then COVID happened. And when COVID happened, we kind of had to stop doing an evening of Kagura. But I had been working with the team at the RCC Culture Center for, we did like broadcasts, live broadcasts of Kagura during COVID. And so that was the point where I really got to know the team at RCC Culture Center, which has a lot of people who are super into Kagura, know a lot about Kagura, very knowledgeable. And they taught me a lot of things just by doing, we did Q&A sessions, did online Q&A sessions. I would have people from all over the world asking questions. And that was how I learned a lot about Kagura as well.
That's awesome. I remember those online sessions during COVID. And it was so fun. And it was such an innovative idea because we needed that. We needed that passionate performance to get us through while we were all staying at home. And the chats on those sessions were so fun and people enjoying the costumes and all the great questions as they were watching from around the world, right? I kind of hope we do that again, the live streams, while we have a real in-person audience as well. It'd be great to see that happen again. I'm sure that's a lot of work, though.
Yeah, it was a lot of work, a lot of trial and error. I don't think they'd ever done something like that before. They weren't sure how it was going to run. They weren't sure if anybody was going to watch. It was just they had the time, and they were like, well, let's just see what we can do. That was also the same time that they established the RCC Kagura YouTube channel as well, because they had time and resources and they thought, well, let's see what we can make happen here. It was very fun to sort of be in the mix of something new happening and see it succeed.
That's wonderful. So in 2026, are there big changes happening for RCC and Kagura Performance? Is it going to continue every Wednesday night? Is that right?
Yes. So the season runs from April to December. So starting April 1st, April 1st is a Wednesday. So that's our first performance will be on April 1st. And it'll run all the way to the second to last Wednesday of December. So that's already been decided. We're having a big meeting actually this weekend with all the heads of the Kagura troops come together for our big annual meeting. I know that last year we did two performances in February and two in March, like preseason performances. I don't know if they'll be doing that this year or not, but I do know that the regular season has been announced and decided, which is really, really great news.
Sorry, I was on mute there. That's great. Now you have three of your favorite Kagura stories that you're going to detail for us.
Yes.
Give us the play-by-play. What are these stories about? I love it.
Okay.
Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with Ushi Gozen.
Okay. Go ahead.
The tragic tale of Ushi Gozen. A lot of my stories that I like in Kagura are very, they're on the dramatic side. They're a lot of revenge or a lot of like sad things happen because that's just what I like. To be fair, not all Kagura stories have very sad elements to them. This story, though, is particularly sad. So the story starts with the birth of a baby. And this baby is born as sort of the love child between a very important person and the servant. And so the baby is born, but the baby has horns. And they're like, well, this obviously, we got to kill the baby. This can't be good. So they have this, you can see the woman on the screen, she's holding this newborn baby and she's been designated to kill the baby, but she can't do it. So she says, I'm going to leave her in the woods and hope for the best. So I'm not going to kill her, but I'll leave her in the woods. So anyway, Ushi Gozen grows up in the woods and she sort of learns these mystical, magical powers. So Ushi Gozen has these sort of powers and eventually they start to hear rumors in the capital about this creature with horns. And what happens is that the emperor says, look, you gotta kill this creature. And so he says to his son, look, you gotta kill her. But the son knows that this is his half-sister. And he's like, Dad, you can't make me kill her. This is my half-sister, I know. And the father is like, how dare you disobey me? This is Ushi Gozen here, so beautiful. This is the Asahigo Kagura troop, one of my favorite Kagura troops. The costumes and makeup so beautiful. So the emperor says, how dare you disobey me, son? You must go and kill her. So the son is sort of lamenting his fate to his father in this very dramatic scene. And his best friend says, hey, look, I'll go talk to Ushi Gozen. I'll tell her that she needs to like leave. She needs to get out of here and that'll spare her life. So the friend goes and he finds, this is, she goes in dancing, really beautiful, finds her and says, look, your brother's been ordered to kill you. You have to get out of here. And she says, no, if it is my fate that my father wants my brother to kill me, then I will meet him in battle. So basically the brother and sister who don't want to fight each other get into this epic battle. She transforms into her demon form and says, look, you know, like this is the way it's going to have to be. And in the end, very sad, the brother basically has to kill the sister. And she says, you know, I would rather die by your hand than by anybody else's. And it's so, the way that Asahigoka does the emotions, it is so dramatic and beautiful. Like I had tears in my eyes translating this because I had never seen this play. This was during COVID, so I didn't get to see it in person. So I just had the script and the video and I'm like tears streaming down my face translating this because the emotion is so raw and powerful and beautiful. And to my knowledge, I've never seen anybody else perform this play other than Asahigoka. I did actually have the chance to see it. This year I had the chance to see it, but I'm actually not going to be in Japan. I'm going to be on a business trip for Kagura, so I can't see it. And I'm so sad because I want to see Shikozen so badly. The makeup is so beautiful, again, with Asahigoka as well. So Kagura is kind of like Kabuki in that the men play the women. And they do this really beautiful, elegant job. And it's such a sad story, the way that they portrayed the emotion, which is why it's one of my top favorite Kagura plays.
It's so interesting. You know, I don't think I've seen this one.
Yeah, they don't perform it very often.
So I'm going to look out for it. It sounds really interesting. And the costumes, of course, like all the Kagura I've seen here in Hiroshima, so intricate, so beautiful.
Yeah.
And then here we're seeing the smoke coming up and the stage. So that means a fight is coming. Is that so
generally when you see the smoke, it can mean a lot of things.
Okay.
It generally means it'll start if there's like, you know, the demon has arrived. Is something mystical is about to happen? Is something evil is about to happen? If a fight is about to happen, it signifies something not quite natural is about to happen. You can see they did the quick music all played live. It's really wonderful, and they do the quick mask changes. You can see these, they have these blue coats that they've just revealed now into the red. Perfect timing on the video, good job. They revealed into that, the reveal always happens in the play.
Now did you catch that? Because I timed it so that you would see that reveal.
Very well done.
As they're spinning, they change with snaps in the costume, so it comes down and reveals all these bright colors underneath. It always, like, as you're watching it as an audience, you're like, I missed that. Wait, how are they in new costumes?
Yeah. Yeah, they do a really good job with the lightning quick changes. And it's this great performance element of Hiroshima Kagura that you don't get in a lot of Kagura elsewhere.
Yeah. Now, just for a moment, let's play the music. So it's, the music is so fun and such a wonderful part of Kagura.
Yes.
So we're hearing flute and taiko drumming is the main, and it makes you feel really excited as you're watching. The tempo changes as we're going into the fight scene, right?
Right. So there's four musicians. There's the large taiko, the small taiko, two very small hand cymbals that they play, and then there's a flute. And basically it is the job of the musicians to not only provide a soundtrack, but you also heard them chanting as well. So sometimes they'll be describing what the environment around the players looks like. So if they're set in a mountain, then you can see there's the flute is on the end. The guy in next to the flute is playing the hand cymbals. And then there's the small taiko drum beside him, and then the large taiko drum there. And the guy who has the large taiko drum and the small taiko drum are generally the ones doing the bulk of the singing, the chanting, setting the scene. They also sort of do sound effects sometimes. It's always really interesting. They really help with the mood, the pacing, the excitement. They really bring the drama. And the flute especially has hardly any breaks except when someone is talking, and sometimes even when they don't. And the flute really carries a lot of the music.
Yeah. And one of the most amazing things I learned when I saw a rehearsal was they had live musicians, and they said, we always rehearse with live musicians. We never play recordings to rehearse. It's a team effort. They're such an integral part of the performance, even rehearsals, right?
Right. Because there's no sheet music whatsoever. They learn it all by ear. And every troupe has their own distinct rhythm, their own distinct sound that they do. And a lot of it is quite improvisational, as you can imagine. So that's why it's not like a recorded thing. When people come together in the conga troupe, oftentimes the musicians are also performers on stage as well. And they can kind of change in and out as needed. And it is really, it's a huge team effort to get a performance off the ground, not just the performers on stage and musicians on stage, but the people behind the stage, working the curtains and doing the smoke machine and all the other effects that you need. It's a really massive undertaking, which I really got to see up close last year when I was doing the interpretation for the host as well, because I would be waiting in the wings with everybody, seeing them, you know, you got people who are half dressed and their makeup's half done and they're trying to get everything done in time for the show. And you can just see how much of a team effort it really is.
Amazing. We've had some great comments so far. Mendel has joined us. Yay, Mendel.
Hi, Mendel.
He said, way to go on translations.
Thank you.
And I'm sure the Japanese would also like to have subtitles too.
We get told that quite often. A lot of the Japanese guests, if they're not hardcore Kagura regular fans, a lot of them are, if they're not, they're like, you have English subtitles, where's the Japanese, the modern day Japanese translation for the subtitles, because it is quite difficult to understand,
you know? Right. I met a Japanese person who loves Kagura. She went to the English Kagura with her kids, and she said they were actually reading the English because they knew English a bit, and they're like, it was really helpful.
Yeah, I'm sure. I hear that as well. A lot of people were like, well, I see the English and I can understand some of it. And now I'm like, oh, like, that's what they're saying.
It's like when I don't understand like a news program, I will look at the, the sign language. And it gives me an idea, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I kind of understand it better, you know? So it's like having another language, another insight is all, it's all good.
It's very helpful.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the next one, which is your next favorite.
Let's talk about Lady Takayasha.
Okay.
Lady Takayasha is another great story of revenge. So Lady Takayasha actually has a historical base. A lot of the plays, especially the plays that are what are called Shinmai, the new plays that are created post-World War II. A lot of them are actually based on historical people and places. And this one is based on someone who's kind of famous in Hiroshima, which is, you got Takayasha Hime. So Lady Takayasha, or Takayasha Hime, is the daughter of Taira no Kiyomori, who was a warlord in the Warring States period. And so this story starts off with Lady Takayasha, and she's sort of lamenting the fact that her father was killed by the rival clan at the time. And she, her whole entire clan, her whole family was killed except for her. And so she is lamenting her fate. You can see she's got a lantern because she's at a shrine. So she's, you know, lamenting that she's born a woman and there's nothing that she can do. And so what she decides to go to is Kifune Shrine, which is actually a shrine in Kyoto, really exists. So she goes there to pray to the shrine to give her magic powers, to give her dark magic in this sort of this prayer ritual. And so she goes there, she says, look, this is my last night. I'm going to pray to the gods to give me dark power. And she does her ritual. The gods come through. They give her dark power. And she's like, great, now I can get revenge on the people who killed my family. So the story is about her like amassing her forces at her castle in Soma. She has two henchmen that appear in the play. So you can see her at the shrine. They do this great, you can see the smoke, you know, the fog coming out. So you see something mystical is happening. You know, she's praying to get this like dark magic from the god. This was actually a performance that was done for the G7 summit, which is pretty great. This is the Kami Nakachoshi Kagura troop. So you can see the scroll there means that she's gotten her power. And so after that, she goes to amass her forces. And so obviously, when you have someone who's trying to get revenge on the Imperial Capital, Capital's not going to take it lightly. So they send two warriors to come and destroy her. And then they have a great big battle. And this is one of my favorite plays because she is someone who is really driven by revenge, and she's powerful, and she's kind of a boss. And every time I'm like, please let her win. Like, just once, let Lady Takeyasha win. And you can see those are her henchmen. They have these really crazy, like, 80s hairband kind of, like, wigs. They're made of horsehair. They're really great. So her henchmen kind of, like, get word that they're coming to kill Lady Takeyasha, and they go to warn her. Yeah, we've got General Mitsukuni coming. So you can see it's, you know, she has these mystical powers. She's still human, and then eventually she turns into a demon, which happens with a lot of the women who are sort of the bad guys in the story. Is there these beautiful court ladies with, again, you see the really ornate costumes. These costumes are all handmade, hand embroidered with the really shiny gold and silver threads, like small mirrors, anything to catch the light, essentially. And they're extremely heavy. These costumes can weigh up to 20, 30 kilos when you have the full regalia on, and they cost about as much as a small car. So they repair them as needed, and they pass them down from generation to generation. Some costumes have 50, 60, 70 years of history because they are extremely expensive. So you can see you've got this classic formation of two and two, and then the big baddie in the back. So it's a formation of five. You see a lot in Kagura. Usually it starts out, they'll have two versus two. The big baddie will kind of disappear into the background for a little bit. The two versus two, the good guys will generally take down the two henchmen, and then the big baddie will reappear, and that'll be like the final boss battle, which is some really classic sort of Kagura formation that you see. And you can see they've got swords. These swords are blunted, but they still really do hurt when you get hit with them, which happens. And then you see over here, the guy on the right-hand side has the sort of colorful paper wand. That's called a gohei, and it symbolizes that he has divine power and righteousness on his side. The colors are traditional Kagura colors that they have that represent the different cardinal directions and the seasons. But they always, if you see someone holding a paper wand that has like a triangle with little things hanging off of it, that means they're on the side of good. That means they have divine power and justice on their side. Generally means they're going to win. Unfortunately for our 80s hairband guys over here.
The horsehair wigs are my favorite. They just are everywhere, and they just move with the wind, and they're so dramatic and wonderful. And I love how they move their heads, so it moves even more.
Yeah, they're very aware of it. And apparently, so there's a lot of photographers I know who take photos of Kagura, and they're like, you know, if you can tell it's a good Kagura troop, if they've really brushed out the hair, if the hair is really nice, and like the upkeep is really good, because it makes a nice dramatic shot when they kind of look up. Hair just goes whoosh, when you can like see they're like determined face, and it's always a good time to watch and see.
So much spinning. This must be a challenging part of learning Kagura, is spinning with all of your costume not hitting each other, your swords not hitting each other, not falling down dizzy, right? This is amazing.
It's a very dancer kind of ballet. You have to have one point, and you hit the point, and you hit the point, and you practice, and you practice, and you practice. So that way, when you're on stage, you know where you are, you know where your footing is. Especially you'll see later on when this is Lady Takeyasha, when she has her mask on, the eye holes for the mask are quite small, and it can be really hard to see where you are. So they kind of use each other. They use the music so they can see where the sound is coming from, so they know where they are. And they sort of have, you can see the mask right over there. That's still one of the smaller ones, but it's quite difficult to see. So it takes a lot of practice to know where you're supposed to be to get it all done. And it's really, truly, this is the bigger one. This is the final mask that they'll have. So they go through sort of evolutions of smaller to bigger, depending on what the play is. Some of them start with bigger ones, depending on what it is. But it's truly
I've definitely seen this one, because the transformation from the smaller demon mask to the bigger one, mm-hmm. the actor does in like one turn. And you're like, how is that possible to change it so fast? It's amazing.
They have a lot of plays that do that. You can see he just changed again to like having no masks, so back to like her human form. There are different endings with this play, which is interesting because sometimes they just defeat the demon and the demon is gone. Sometimes they turn back into a human. One of my absolute favorite versions of this play that I've only seen done once by, once again, the previous Kagura troupe that I mentioned, Asahiko Oka, they have Takeyasu Hime is very, she's very prideful, right? She has a lot of pride. There's no way she's going to let them kill her, so she kills herself. And it was the most, the entire audience gasped because it never happens. And we all were like in tears watching it because it was so beautifully done. And I was like, that is so perfect for Takeyasu Hime. It's a perfect way to end her story because I'm like, it makes sense. Why would she, you know, she's very much, you know, her own woman, very, has a lot of pride. So there are different endings to Lady
Takeyasu. That's amazing. Yeah. I had no idea there could be different endings.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Yeah. We have some great comments here. I have noticed Paul has joined. Thanks for joining, Paul. I have noticed that international audiences are sometimes a bit disappointed that she doesn't win in the end.
Me too. I want her to win. I am cheering so hard for her every single time. I want Lady Takeyasu to win. She's my favorite.
And Mendel has added some of the Kagura I've been to are nearly all night thing. It's nice as you get into a trance by the music and the hot sake. I love how the drunk old men shout and are totally living it up. But that's true. When you go and see performances, even during the day, sometimes like at Kagura Village or something, you'll see people throwing up the pillows or really shouting and getting involved. And when the bad guy comes out, everybody shouts at the stage, right? It's wonderful when you have an audience who's so into it, right?
Yeah, it's one of the interesting things about Kagura is that it is a traditional performing art, but it is very much a folk art of the people. If you go into the countryside during autumn festivals, it is an all-night thing. They start at like 7 or 8 and they go until 1 or 2 in the morning. Some places in Shimane, some places in Hiroshima as well, they go literally all night till the sun is up. And those are really hardcore, like we've been doing this forever kind of Kagura things, which obviously there's no subtitles there. But it's really interesting to see how the people get into it. And there's a real art to kind of when you're supposed to, like, you know, sort of jeer and cheer. And it's really a different experience than the Wednesday night stage performances. So stage Kagura and what they call Hono Kagura, so this is Kagura performed at a shrine dedicated to the gods, are two sort of separate things. Both good. But it is a very different experience to see the sort of really like hardcore, deep sort of Kagura that you get in the countryside that goes all night, that has, you know, the alcohol and the musicians, and they, you know, if you have a character who you know is going to, you know, the demon is going to die, they don't let them die. So what they'll do is they'll get the demon and then, you know, the band will kind of strike back up again and they'll have it, the demon pop out again, and they'll make them do it over and over again. And so they're like, okay, that's good enough. Good job. It's a really different atmosphere and vibe. It is really, really so much fun.
That's great. And sometimes you can even see like kids Kagura.
Yes.
And that's really exciting because you know that this is a kind of performing art that is going to persist into the future if we can get kids who are passionate about continuing the art of Kagura. And it's really fun. And I was around an audience that was really enjoying all the mistakes that the kids were making, but that was part of it. And everybody was so encouraging to them and really lovely.
Yeah, kids Kagura is a really great thing that a lot of the Kagura that you see is based in communities. So they have their local shrine that they perform at, their community rallies around that. So a lot of the younger kids that you see in Kagura troops, often at the backstage questions and talk session, one of the questions we get is, why did you join the Kagura troupe? And the answer is, well, I saw my brother do it. I saw my dad do it. My grandfather do it. I grew up with Kagura and I saw them and I thought that it was amazing and I wanted to do it too, is one of the biggest reasons that people join Kagura. Is it's very much a community thing where, you know, this isn't their job. This is not their day job. They have school and they have work. And then, you know, twice a week they'll come together for like 2 hours and practice Kagura and sort of build a real camaraderie and sense of family there. You know, they'll go out and they'll drink together, or they'll go out and they'll eat together, and they'll do performances on the weekend or at Kagura competitions. It really sort of becomes like a way of life for them. And it's very sustained by the community, very sustained by donations from the community. If you go to performances in places other than the Wednesday night performances, they have what's called ohana. So you give them essentially money. Is you'll have a favorite Kagura troupe and you'll go up to the representative and you'll hand them money, or you'll hand them money from the stage. And it's a way to sort of support, because they're not really receiving funding for any of it. It's all completely sustained by the community.
Isn't that amazing that these talented performers are not paid? They're mostly volunteers, and they're just, maybe they're getting their transportation covered, or, yeah, you know, like, but most of the money is, a lot of expense goes into the costumes, mm-hmm, and all the travel and everything. So just the passion to be doing it as volunteers is, and part of the community building and a passion for keeping the culture alive, it's all just fantastic, right?
I mean, it depends. I mean, the Wednesday night performers, they do get paid for that. Was they deserve it, honestly. There are performances where they do get paid for it, but a lot of it, as you said, completely volunteer. They're not paid for it whatsoever. It's just, you know, doing their duty to their shrine, to their community, and to the art of Kagura.
Wow. Also, Mendel's talking about visual effects.
Yes.
Special effects, like sparks.
I saw one
where one of the actors had a hand cut off in the battle, and the hand was thrown into the audience. And
yes.
So special effects is a big part of it to make it fun, right?
It's a big part of Hiroshima Kagura. To clarify, there's a lot of Kagura around Japan. Hiroshima Kagura really had a distinct evolution that happened because of Kagura competitions. So essentially, Kagura was longer performances, 3 hours, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, really, really long. And obviously, if you're judging a competition, you can't sit through, you know, 6 3-hour performances. So they kind of cut it down to the best bits, 45 minutes or so, the best bits, the most important bits, the most interesting bits. And they would have competitions to see who was the best, you know, as a troupe, who was the best individually, you know. And that just sort of was a culture that evolved in Hiroshima. And then one single Kagura troupe decided they wanted to do something very stage effecty and different. And they had this play where the main baddie gets his head cut off. And from the head would pop off and sparks would shoot out of the bottom of it. And it would kind of fly across the stage. And the crowd went wild. But the judges were like, no, 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 no. That is not Kagura. I don't know what you're doing. And they disqualified them. They said, I don't know what you're doing, but it's not Kagura. But the crowd loved it. And so because the crowd loved it, this Kagura troupe decided that they were going to do their own show. They were going to do a stage Kagura show. I believe it was held at Estelle Plaza, and it was called Super Kagura. Because they have a thing called Super Kabuki. So they're riffing on that, and it was Super Kagura. And they did all these stage effects, and it was packed. The people could not get enough of it. So when other troops saw that this was really working, they decided to incorporate things like, you know, the smoke machines and sparks and thin paper streamers. You can see the smoke here. Thin paper streamers that they would throw, and it would cover the stage and look like spider webs or magic. And they made it very flashy and entertaining. And it was basically because of that one performance that sparked this whole sort of revolution change that happened with Kagura. And like, to be clear, you know, like, they had sparks and things like that before. If you see a performance of the eight-headed demon snake, you will see that there are sparks that come out of its mouth that breathe fire, very cool looking. But really, this really great kind of showy stage Kagura really sort of took off in Hiroshima. And the performance with the swords with the sparks is done by the Ato Kagura troupe. Ato Kagura is it's an intangible folk art recognized by Hiroshima, and the blades are steel. So when they hit against each other, they spark, and it looks very, very cool. The only problem is So when you're on a stage performance, anything with moving fire or sparks is a big no-no. So you don't really get to see it often on a stage, but when they do spark, they actually last year, when the Otokagura troupe performed, they performed three different plays. One of them was the one with the swords that spark, and you could actually see the sparks, which was really cool looking, very fun. So not every single play, but just a few. But the special effects, like you said, the prop with the hand, the use of props, the use of, you know, like a medicine box, or if there's a play with a bridge in it, that where the bridge is very important. There's a play called Senbon Zakura, where it takes place on a bridge, so they'll actually have a bridge there. The use of cherry blossoms falling from the top of the stage. There's so many different props that you can see that are used, and that's all taken from stage art. And as you can see in these photos, there is no stage dressing. There are no trees, there are no mountains, there are no backdrops except for, as you can see, the sort of green curtain there. So you're sort of supposed to imagine all of the, you know, those, they'll say, oh, look at the foliage, it is so beautiful. And you have to kind of imagine there's foliage there, or you have to imagine, I am standing before a river, and you have to imagine there's a river there. So they don't really rely, if you think of like Western plays or musicals, when you have these big moving set pieces, nothing like that. Gotta leave it up to the imagination, because it was originally performed on a very small stage at Shinto shrines, but they don't have elaborate stage dressing. No also doesn't have elaborate stage dressings, really. If you think about performing art of No, there's just generally, you know, you've got the painted background with the pine tree and stuff. It's the same with Kagura. There's really no backgrounds, so to speak.
Yeah, that's so interesting, isn't it? Yeah. I wonder if, you know, like you were talking about the super Kagura, or the more visual art version of Kagura, and it changed the way it's done. I wonder if in the future we will see more like VR backgrounds as they're performing. Like, how is it going to change in the future? It's kind of hard to imagine, but it could definitely include more technology and things.
Well, they're sort of starting that. There's actually a performance every summer, starting from 2 years ago, where they do scary stories in the summertime. Because in Japan, you tell scary stories to give you the chills. And what they've done is they've taken traditional, or they're called kaidan in Japanese, traditional scary stories, and they made them into Kagura plays. So they adapted these plays, and they used a lot of like actual backgrounds and props, more of a play than Kagura. So kind of a mix of Kagura and like a traditional stage play. And the first year, a lot of the plays featured like blood and like people coming down from the top of the stairs, where so they were behind the audience and it's pitch black. And all of a sudden you get this like old grizzled bloody samurai just like limping down the aisles, and people are screaming, and it was just like nothing I'd ever seen before. And the second year, a lot of the plays featured a lot of fire. So they would have these like lighting effects with fires. They were shooting arrows like onto the stage from the audience, just doing all these wild things. So I think there is a lot of freedom in doing a non-traditional Kagura show and seeing, but still keeping it within the world. The language is still Kagura language. A lot of the elements are still the same, but it's just saying, okay, well, what else can we adapt into Kagura? Because Kagura is really, there's a lot of the plays are adapted from Kabuki. So it's like an adaptation. If you can adapt that, what else can you adapt? And how can you make it fun and different and relatable to the audience? It also gives the Kagura troops a challenge of writing a brand new play, staging a brand new play. So that's really fun to see every summer. Me and my friends always go and see it. They usually have it at the Asakita Ward, like citizens sort of stage. They have like the cultural center there. And me and my friends every summer, that's one of our pilgrimage over to Asakita Ward to go see. And they give you salt after the performance is over to make sure you don't take any evil spirits home with you. So you've got your purifying salt that you have. And they really go all out with it. It is so fun.
That sounds really fun. I mean, Japan is so famous for horror movies, as well as these horror like experiences in summer festivals.
Yes, yes.
Where you go through a haunted house. Mm-hmm. And I have had so many visitors tell me that they accidentally went in thinking it would just be like a normal like a haunted house. And they're like, it is the scariest thing I've ever been in inside in my life. And I will warn everybody never to go in one again. So if you do go in one, just be prepared to be scared because they're scary.
I take it seriously.
They are serious. All right. Let's go to your third one about the Maple Leaf viewing parties.
Maple Leaf viewing party. This is the first Kagura show that I ever saw. And it is a great story. Again, my favorite stories feature women. So this is, again, these demon... the way that I translate it, there's the demon queen and her demon sisters. And they live on this mountain that actually exists called Mount Togakushi. It's in Nagano. And they're living on this mountain. And they, you know, it's their mountain. Anybody who dares enter the demon sister's mountain will become their prey. So you got these two guys from the capital who are like, let's go on a hunting trip and let's go see the foliage. Let's go see the maple leaves. So they depart on a hunting trip and they get lost on Mount Togakushi. And so the demon's sisters see these two men coming up the mountain and they go, ah, we will eat well tonight, sisters. Let's lure them in and have a party. Have a maple leafing party. We'll disguise ourselves as beautiful court ladies. We'll get them very drunk and then we'll eat them. So they have their party and the two men come up and they say, excuse me, lovely ladies, what are you doing here in these woods? Very strange to see you when we have not seen anybody else here. It's not suspicious at all. And they say, oh, yes, we're just us girls having a party. And they invite them to have a drink and they get them very, very drunk. And they are so drunk where they just can't stand anymore. And slowly, during this whole thing where they're drinking, the demon sisters are slowly revealing hints that they're demons. And they have a small mass change, and then they change back. And the small mass change, and then they change back. And eventually, when they're so drunk that they can't stand, they become their full demon selves, and they try to devour them, when all of a sudden, this god appears. And he says, I am the great god Hachiman. Be not afraid. And he says, you know, you are my devout and loyal followers. Therefore, I shall break their spell and give you this sacred sword with which to slay the demons. Your life is in danger. You've been fooled. So he gives them the sword and rushes back to the heavens. Heaven forfend, he actually helped them, but he gave them the sword, so I guess it's cool. And then they face off against the demons, and unfortunately the demons lose. But it is really, really beautiful because you have a lot of people on stage. It takes a lot of people to do this play because you've got the two heroes, you've got the three baddies, and you've got the god. And the three baddies are in just gorgeous kimono. They usually have a nice backdrop with maple leaves. They're usually carrying maple leaf props when they do the elegant dancing. And it's so bewitching. And you can understand how these heroes have been bewitched by these beautiful women that are actually demons. And it's such a great play, especially in the autumn. When you get it timed right with the seasons, it's absolutely gorgeous. The makeup is always beautiful. The costumes are always beautiful. So it's another one of my favorite stories featuring lovely, lovely, powerful women who really should win one of these days.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if a troupe actually gets a different ending and the women do win for once?
It would be very nice. Very nice. I mean, Takeyasu committing suicide is like the closest we've gotten. Oh,
yeah, that's a bit harsh.
Not very close.
Speaking of women, though, I've heard people ask quite often, are there any women who perform?
There are. I have heard tell. I have seen one. I have seen, in all of my years watching hundreds of Kagura plays at this point, I have only seen one instance of an actual woman performing a central role as one of the heroes. And that was very cool because it doesn't happen often. It's not like they're not allowed to join. They're allowed. A lot of the women you see in the Kagura plays are musicians. You see a lot of them playing the flute. They're extremely good at playing the flute. Sometimes you'll see them on hand cymbals, but you don't really see them in costume very often. So when I saw this performance, and I, for the life of me, cannot remember the Kagura troupe, but I've only seen it once. And sometimes if you have like a play, like the Eight-Headed Demon Snake, where you'll have a ton of people on stage, but in masks. There was one time where there was a girl who did one of the demon snakes. It's not a speaking role, but she's still on stage. So they're allowed to, it's just you don't see it very often. It's still very much a male dominated thing, but like, I don't think that they would be like, no, you can't. like if they want to, I'm sure that they could, but you just don't see it very often.
I'm sure they would be welcoming, because our daughter showed an interest in Kaguya. She was obsessed with it for a while. And as a young girl, they were very encouraging and saying, come and practice with us and no problem. And, you know, like, so if there is an interest, and how do you feel about even international people? Would they be able to join a Kaguya troupe if they had a bit of Japanese, or
they got to have a lot of Japanese? You got to be able to
hurdle.
You got to be able to speak Japanese to get it, because I mean, just even the initial hurdle of like get it, because it's very, they're close knit. It's a close knit group, so you really have to be friends with these people. You have to get in good with these people. A lot of the I've been very lucky in that in my journey with Kaguya. I've been introduced to so many Kaguya troop members and the leaders, and you know, they know my face, they know who I am, and that they know what I do, and they know that I love Kaguya. So it's never been an issue. You know, I speak Japanese, so it's usually fine. But like, if you are like absolutely serious about it and really want to do it and commit to it, first of all, you're going to have a job that's not Kaguya, because it's not going to pay you. And you have to obviously be in a position where you can converse with these people and be willing to learn from them. I don't think that they would be like, no, you can't. But the language, definitely, you would really have to have it down. Yeah.
Challenging. Would you ever consider being in a Kaguya troupe? No.
No, not for me. I'm happy to be the MC. I'm happy to let them take center stage. I would love to do their makeup though, because it looks like it's so much fun. The makeup is pretty distinct depending on the Kaguya troops. And I really love makeup, and I would love to be like, can we just get a little, because it's really evolved, the makeup. Honestly, like when I first started to see Kaguya, like regular makeup. And now you get people who are using like highlighter and like sparkles, and like they just sort of glitter, and they're so beautiful. And so I'd really would love to like help out with the makeup.
That would be fascinating. I remember going behind the scenes in the Chinese opera and seeing them putting on the makeup, and how fascinating that was. Doing the makeup, how interesting.
It changes the faces. If you see, so the men that play the women are called onnagata. It's the same word in kabuki as well. Their faces change so completely that it's like, how are you that, even when they're like not playing the women, even when they're playing the heroes and they've got the makeup on, I'm like, wait, you, what? Like, how did your face go from like this to this? Like, it's really fun to see, especially being backstage, being able to like talk to the people before they go on stage. And, you know, I remember this one guy was like laughing and joking and carrying on. And he's like, oh, hey, like, you know, I'm so excited to perform today. It was Christmas Eve. It was our last performance last year. It was Christmas Eve. And he had these little reindeer horns on. And he was like, look at me. I'm just like a 40-year-old guy in reindeer horns. I'm like, you're so cute. And he's like, she thinks I'm cute. And then he gets out on stage and he's playing one of the main guys, and he's powerful and enunciating and very like cool and like handsome. And I'm like, the same guy that had like reindeer horns on backstage? Like what happened?
But like the power of the performance.
Yeah.
And the performer comes out and can transition. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Being involved with the Q&A, what are some of the questions that have come up from international visitors about Kaguya? Can you share some of those?
Well, sort of like similar to what we were talking about before with the twirling around, how do you do that without getting dizzy? Big question we get. Another big question we get, like I mentioned previously, is what prompted you to join? What inspired you to join Kaguya? We get questions about the costume changes, the mask changes, how is that done? We get questions about, so, you know, how long does it take to be able to perform on stage? So, you know, after you join the troupe, you know, does it take a year? Does it take 6 months? How often did you sort of have to practice to be able to get on stage? And generally what's interesting is the answers are kind of very similar across the board, especially if you just are a member of a kagura troupe. If you just join, they'll start you out with like hand symbols or really easy things. And they're like, you know, it really depends on the person's aptitude and how much they really want to learn. You know, some people it'll take a, you know, like a month, some people it'll take 6 months. But there's no like end to it's, you know, it's the same with any kind of stage or acting or singing. Is you always want to get better. So even if you've been doing it for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, there's always something you can improve, which I think is really a selling point with Kagura for a lot of the members, is they always can find ways to improve themselves. So which is a lot of the questions we get are sort of related to that. We also get asked, what is your favorite play to perform? What do you like to perform? And things like that as well, which are always fun questions because they're like, oh, I've never thought about that before. What is my favorite play to perform?
That's so cool. How are they taught? Is it like is it something that's written down, or is it just verbal from their mentors in the troupe are teaching them? They're showing them how to do it and they practice, or do they study books or anything? Do you know about that?
I've never been to a practice session, but from what I've heard, it's a lot of watching what your elder troupe members are doing. It's a lot of watching and listening. It's the same with the musicians. You watch, you learn. I do know that some troupes have scripts that are written. Some of them don't. A lot of the times when I get the script, they'll be transcribed from YouTube videos to get an actual script, because a lot of them don't have scripts. And it is a lot of just watching and learning, learning by example, from what I've heard. I've never actually sat in on a practice session, but and a lot of the international visitors that we get in the Q&A session kind of assume that everybody in the troupe is a Kagura expert, when that actually couldn't be further from the truth. A lot of them are not so much focused on the why Kagura, what is Kagura, how old is Kagura. They're less focused on the history and more focused on what the troupe is doing. So that's really interesting, because they'll be asked these historical questions and they'll go, anybody? Anybody know? So that's always interesting to see. Is they're not so caught up in like how, as opposed to like why do we do this? What do we like about this kind of thing?
That's great. That's so interesting. Well, we just have a few more minutes. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you really want people to know if they're interested in seeing Kagura? Or,
well, if you're interested in seeing Kagura, we actually have two performances this month. They're not the Wednesday night performances, so they're not subtitled, but it will be at Estelle Plaza, and it'll be on the, hang on one sec, just trying to make sure that I had this information ready, because I wanted to plug this really badly, on the 20th, Tuesday, and the 21st, Wednesday of this month. It's going to be held in the evening. It'll start at 7 o'clock, and there's two plays that they'll be performing. We have two really great Kagura troupes. We've got the Hasadake Kagura troupe from Akitakata City, and then we also have the Kinsho Kagura troupe, super popular troupe from Kita Hiroshima-cho, will be coming up. It'll be at Estelle Plaza, JMS Estelle Plaza, which is right here in the middle of the city. It'll be in their medium hall, and you can get tickets on the day, or you can get tickets in advance. Tickets in advance are 2,000 yen. Tickets on the day, 2,500 yen. You get two plays with a little intermission in between. You can take photos with the cast afterwards. Always a really fun time. So if you're interested and you're willing to forego the English subtitles, then definitely come out and see it. If not, April 1st is when the regular season starts. You can find information. There should be links that I've sent to Joy that I'm sure she would love to post up. It's run by the RCC Culture Center, and it happens at the Hiroshima Prefectural Citizen Center, right behind Edion in the middle of the city. Tickets are available on the day or in advance. It's 1,500 yen for on the day tickets, just free seating or if you want to see it. And that has English subtitles, English interpretation for the MC, and you can take photos with the cast in their costumes after the show. I'm there every single show. Come say hi. I would love to talk to you and say hi. I'm usually outside about an hour before the show starts at 7, doors open at 6. I'm outside at 6 promoting the show in English. another one of my friends, shout out to Takobuko on Instagram, and shout out to Kagura Boy, who are always there with me doing a promotion in Japanese. I do promotion in English. Come out, say hi. It's always a good time. It's about 45 minutes, very reasonable. So come on out and see us Wednesday night, Kagura, April 1st.
That's awesome. If people wanted to go to the Esther Plaza one,
yes,
where can they buy tickets? Because you can buy tickets for the Wednesday one on Klook or Viator.
Yes.
Or in the rest center, house, the main information hall, the rest hall, right?
So if you want to get tickets for the show at Estelle Plaza, you can actually buy them directly at Estelle Plaza. You can go, or you can also get them through Ticketpeer, Ticketopia. You can also get them from there if you're like cool with Japanese. If not, go directly to Estelle Plaza and be like, I would like tickets, please. And they will be happy to oblige.
And Esther Plaza is short walking distance from Hiroshima Peace Park Museum.
Yes.
Just head toward the water away from the mountains.
Yes.
And you'll see it on the main road there. Thank you so much, Rachel.
Well, thank you for having me. It was my pleasure. My pleasure.
There was so much wonderful information. I love learning about your favorite plays. I love hearing all the stories. I appreciate all of the subtitles. All the work you're doing,
Thank you. It really
helps make the experience alive as you're watching Kagura to know what the story's about. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks everyone for watching. And
Thank you.
If you're in the Hiroshima area, come and watch some Kagura.
Yeah, come hit me up. We'll work something out.